many special people change? How many lives are living strange? Where were you while we were getting high?
Back on Downtown, it's time for Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan joins us. The second biggest music news that Liam Gallagher and brother Noel getting back together, but that's not anywhere near as big as your news, Eric.
There's the connective tissue. I was wondering why I was being Gallagher'd. Literally, I felt like a sledgehammer was coming to my watermelon of a head. Not that I don't love Oasis. Yes, 161 returns to the face of the earth. My cover band that existed for many years, which, you know, petered out just around time of COVID, sort of, you know, it was a time of change in our families anyway. But I guess the families have changed enough that we're all back to, hey, I miss you guys. So, DC, up in Orono, on the 11th of October is, I kind of joked, like many bands that sort of get back together or whatever, different moniker. No one seemed to like my suggestions of said monikers, so we're just going to do it as 161, but yeah.
No, it's exciting. You guys are good.
We were once. I hope we are again. not to denigrate myself. I mean, we've had a couple practices, and then, of course, summer happened, so we haven't seen each other. But, you know, in late July, we got together a couple times, and it did sound at least recognizable. But, yeah, it's a crazy thing. I mean, you know, as we joked during the break, it's like getting back on a bicycle. Sometimes you still skin your knee. We're going to see where the skin knees come from, but honestly, everybody will be drinking Abe's wonderful suds and hopefully having a good time. So come on out October 11th to Orner Brewing, then we are planning some sort of glorious actual reunion show. This is sort of a warm-up, and more to come on that. But yeah, it's cool. It's my catharsis, and I've always said that. It's a really good thing, because I haven't had catharsis in a couple of years, which is why I am much grayer and more haggard looking. I didn't say that. Anyway, this is exciting news. Other exciting news, Tommy Cutlets made the 53-man roster on the Giants, it looks like. So there's hope in New Jersey and hope in Central Maine. Cool. Well, speaking of directional things, we're going to talk about Italy today again. We're going to talk about sort of the northwest part of it. And this is a part where a lot of people really like the wines from here, but I don't know that many people have actually visited the region, except for, of course, Venice, which is, you know, a huge tourist spot, but not actually a big wine country because, of course, it's islands in the middle of a sea. So, but that's where you would have had the most popular product from this area, which is, of course, Prosecco. So we'll sort of quick hit that. Prosecco, one of the fastest growing imported wines into the U.S. For the past 20 years, really. Because it's cost effective, let's be honest. Prosecco is still one of the better values. Especially since a lot of the Proseccos have been getting better. Prosecco, just a quick note about it before we move on from something that everybody's experienced at least once or twice. Prosecco is a very different method than our favorite champagne wines, right? So the classical method or the champagne method is a two-stage process that's much more involved, much more labor-intensive, yada, 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 which is why Prosecco, which is done in a style called Cremant, is a much more, which is a single stage process, by the way, is much more cost effective. So, hooray for Prosecco. Prosecco is made out of the Glera grape, which has also been recently sort of readopted into the lexicon as the Prosecco grape, which kind of irritates me because it's called Glera. I think they're just kind of dumbing it down for people like, say, us. It's too bad. But Prosecco itself is not dumbed down. Actually, there's just extraordinarily good good varieties out there, from the sort of more fun to the more serious. So that's also, by the way, made in sort of the more extreme east of where we're talking about today. And if you'll forgive me, I'm going to sort of jump way back to the western part of where we're talking about today, which is not the extreme west of Italy, because last week we talked about the Valdosta and Piedmont, etc. The other main bubbly of Italy that I wanted to talk about quickly, and why we're jumping back, is made in the region of Lombardy. Lombardy, of course, has strong ties, as Piedmont did, to France. I'm sure people who remember the history remember the Dukes of Lombardy, etc. They make a very wonderful wine that is called Franciacorta. Franciacorta is made out of, again, so Lombardy is sort of, again, in the foothills of the Alps, really kind of in the center of the northern part of Italy. And they grow Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, just like they do in Champagne and other places in France that make classical method bubbles. And indeed, Franciacorta is a classical method bubble. It is extraordinarily elegant. Not much is made, and not a lot gets brought into Maine, unfortunately. But if you do have the opportunity to try it, I highly recommend it. There's some other fun wines made in Lombardy, but for the sake of time, we'll move on to the more important things for the masses, if you will. Just east of Lombardy is the gigantic lake, Lake Garda, and it is a glacial lake. Anybody familiar with like the Finger Lakes regions, things like that, will recognize the formation of this gigantic lake gouged out along the western shores and reaching up again into the foothills of the Alps. You have one of the more important and prolific parts of Italy in terms of what the world knows it for, which is the grape Pinot Grigio, but also some other interesting wines that I'll touch on in a minute. But this is the part of the country that I often like to joke about. As you get further north, the people start to look like extras from The Sound of Music. The names start to have a lot more Germanic sound to them, which is not a mistake. You're getting into basically southern Austria, you know, it's I hate to sound so ridiculous, but it's you know, Alpen people. They're tall, blue-eyed, and blonde.
Yes,
they are.
A lot of guys named Rolf.
Right. So they're all up there. They're growing Germanic grapes as well, which is sort of where I'm going with this. Is you see the grapes Gewürztraminer. You see all these manner of things, but you also see red grapes that you don't see elsewhere, which is kind of the gems of this area, which I just kind of want to introduce you to. There are grapes like Teraldego. Teraldego means, depending on the translation, either generic man from the Tyrol Mountains or king of the Tyrol Mountains. But it's a very light-skinned grape, very similar to Pinot Noir, but a little more spicy. You get the grape Lagrein, which is kind of like a Merlot with more tannin, but really, really interesting. The red grape Schiava. Again, these grapes that thrive in the cooler temperatures that are really not grown anywhere else. I mean, the obvious comparison is Pinot Noir, which is grown everywhere. And so I'm sure people who like Pinot Noir have had examples from Sonoma, from Burgundy, from maybe New Zealand. And indeed, they grow Pinot Noir in this area as well. And they're all very different, but people have not really taken these other grapes that I'm talking about and tried to propagate them elsewhere. Kind of bizarre. Moving on. So the Lake Garda that I was talking about, that was on the western side. On the eastern side, you've got an equally important area that grows a lot of very, very famous reds, also some famous whites. But this is the area just surrounding the city of Verona. So this is the famous region where you have the wine Amarone, and it's the junior cousin Valpolicella. Amarone is made by drying the native grapes Corvina and Rondinella in these wonderful rooftop drying areas on racks, and it reduces the moisture in the grape so that when they actually do try to squeeze the grape, the concentration of sugars is much more intense vis-a-vis the waters. So Amarone, if people have had it, is a much more sort of robust, deep red wine, whereas Valpolicella, which is the, as I said, the sort of the younger wine version of it, is kind of fun and lively. And in between, you do have some wonderful variations of that. But I know I'm running out of time, so I just want to kind of cover everything.
No, you have all the time you need. Take your time.
Oh, you stop it. I would. So we covered the last region I kind of want to cover before we're done for the day is the region far to the east, which is the Slovenian border, Friuli, Venezia, Giulia. This is where you get some other extraordinarily good depth in your white wines, Pinot Grigio, Friuliano, some other grapes that are less popular, Ribolla Gela, and then also some of the world's best, actually, funny enough, Merlot and Cab Franc, that rivals the Bordeaux, the finest Bordeaux. So it's a really interesting, very varied, chunk of land up there in northern Italy that, again, not a lot of us have seen, but it is gorgeous. And if anybody ever wants to spend a lot of money on a Airbnb, southern part of Lake Garda, you could do worse. All that said, I will join you next week. We will start to talk about central Italy, Montepulciano versus Montepulciano, etc. So in the meantime, go G-Men, go Tommy Cutlets, pride of northern New Jersey. And I was just sort of sad to not see Daniel Jones on the cut list. That's okay.
Not yet. Okay. Well, he'll end up on the pop list instead at some point, I'm sure.
Inevitably with that line. Yeah, probably.
Thanks, Eric, as always.
Oh, first pick.
Enjoy your week. We'll see you next Tuesday.
Will do.
Eric Meehan, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. Message in the Bottle every week here on